Welcome to Talking Walking, hosted by Andrew Stuck from Rethinking Cities in London. Talking Walking brings you interviews with people from the world of walking, artists, activists, professionals from the built environment, health, recreation and transport sectors, and those of us who have a passion for just taking a walk. In this episode, we talk to artist, author and academic Simon Pope about how he incorporates walking in his art practice, the books that have influenced his work, and what he's been doing recently. Simon is reader at Cardiff School of Art and Design and director of the Centre for Fine Art Research. The interview was recorded in November 2007, just as he was about to embark on leading a residency at the New Media Institute at the Banff Centre of Art in the Canadian Rockies. The interview opens with Simon discussing his book, London Walking.
So I wrote a technical manual, basically, for being able to survive London as a walker. So it was written from a very particular point of view. I actually completed it on the train as I was commuting from Cardiff, where I'd had to bail out of London, basically. And I wrote it as a goodbye note, a warning almost to people, I suppose, about, you know, what happens to London, how it changes so rapidly, and how that you as a walker will sense that change very acutely, mm-hmm. and you'll be implicated in it. And so I just wrote this to try to make it apparent to people, you know, that this is the process that was going on. And of course now with the Olympics, it's kind of, you know, doubly important, I think, for people to know about, you know, what their place is when they're occupying bits of, well, they're moving into bits of London, or having to move out of bits of London, or performing particular actions or behaviours in particular bits of London. You know, you have your use and you have your moment when you can do this.
And did you come to this because you were a walker already as an artist, or
oddly enough, it was as a child. I used to walk on Dartmoor from the age of 8 to maybe 11. My grandparents used to take me on organised walks. They were kind of They didn't like the Ramblers, actually. They saw them as kind of lefties and teachers, and they were. My granddad was an ex-army quartermaster and sergeant, you know, and it was more of a kind of remand school kind of approach to the wilds, you know. So we used to walk as a military unit, pretty much, you know, about 12 people used to go out every Sunday, and we did about 12 miles on Dartmoor. So I got to know that really well at, you know, an early point in my life, and I got a fear for the outdoors through that, you know, and a kind of sort of a reverence, but kind of a, you know, I kind of knew my place in terms of the landscape. And then I didn't walk for a long time, although I did walk, but I didn't see it as walking. I hadn't, you know, I was an art student. I'd been a bus driver. Integrated transport, I recognised as being a great thing. And I was a bus driver, a kind of very high frequency minibus service. And the people, they were then bought out by Stagecoach, but they were also in Docklands in London, in Oxford, and they were kind of, it was pretty dynamic kind of at the time when everything was being privatised, enterprise, you know. And it was kind of interesting to me. So I wrote, as a second year undergraduate art student, I wrote a bus route. As my second year project, and actually presented it to the board of this company for consideration. So I suppose my kind of route knowledge is pretty good. I've got a good brain for routes and for integrating networks, yeah. I suppose. And I would walk because I couldn't afford to do anything else, I suppose, as an art student. And, you know, I kind of cycled a little bit, mostly walked. Moved to London and walked everywhere. I used to walk as a kid, actually. I used to go up to London when I was about years of like 13 onwards. I'd always get the train to London and walk all over London. So I was very, it was an everyday practice for me. I didn't see it as something special, or, you know, like a leisure activity or whatever. It's just what I did to live, you know. And that book was written from that point of view of, like, this is what we do every day. And so that kind of stayed. It still is a practice of mine. I'd still walk, and I cycle, and I've got my Brompton, and I just joined Sustrans because I realised it's an integration of walking and cycling, right? It's not just a cycling pressure group. So, I've writing London Walking, I suppose, was a way of for almost like formalizing the things that you just pick up as a kind of intuition you get, or a kind of set of every, you know, I don't want to sound academic, but everyday practices that you can, they're the tricks and ruses, they're kind of, I know, you know, those kind of particular things you do to get by walking, you know, and yeah.
Yeah. And now, what's happened since then? Because that was some time ago now.
That
I mean, that was.
was, yeah, that was written in 99, and published in 2000. I'd be making software at the time, so I was making software as art, and I was a kind of designer of software and new media works, working around publishing and things. So I had a mass, there was a massive kind of tension. I was making software that seemed to have all the fun. It was getting all the attention and critical acclaim. And you, as an author of that, you kind of write yourself out. No one wants to know about you know. And I got really fed up with this, you know, and I was looking for something that was a more meaningful everyday thing for me to do. I didn't want to be managing software products, which is what I was inevitably going to do. So I got approached by Nesta, the endowment fund for science, technology, and the arts, and they funded me for 3 years to change my art practice from making software into walking as an art practice. I kept having to pinch myself, and I would thank every time I met them. It was like, "Do you realise what you've done here?" You know, she's like a fantastic opportunity. And that I got that fellowship, I also got invited to the Venice Biennale, which is a big break if you're a visual artist. I was representing Wales, well, I'd moved to Cardiff, right? So, with some controversy, I was selected as one of four artists to represent Wales the first time they were in Venice. And I figured this would be it's risky, but I would use that as an opportunity to work out how to bridge from writing London Walking into having a walking art practice. So I built this thing called the Ambulance Science Studio, which was ways of making sense of a city, kind of little tools and things you could deploy as you walk through a city. So it was things like weighing cobbles and things. I remember building a kind of what would you call it? Like an arsenal, like an ammo dump actually, of cobbled stone, little granite sets. Because all over Europe at that time, Western Europe anyway, I still teach in Brussels. But every city you went to that was regenerated, there was always these, I think they were Albanian guys that were laying those intricately laid sort of arcs of granite sets. And so I managed to get a whole load of them from Padua, it was, like straight out the quarry. And I arranged them, I kind of weighed them by hand to see how far I could throw them. So it was going to, you know, obviously, as this other use that paving stones have in Europe. You know? And I built like about eight or so of these sort of different devices to sense different things about the city. Now, looking back on it, that was kind of the end of that thinking about this everyday practice of walking, actually. Funnily, strangely enough, I started to, the further I looked into kind of art practice, I suppose it kind of liberated me from, I suppose, being like an, I don't want to say activist, but I ran to the end of that idea quite quickly. I'd theorised it to some extent, though never very thoroughly. And I came here to Banff actually in 2003, a month after the Biennale had opened. And I sat in the library downstairs from where we are now, about five floors down. I sat for a month and I built an inventory of all their walking books in the library and started to learn about the kind of historical precedents and contemporary artists that would define this field of walking as an art practice. And from that point on, I started to think a little bit more thoroughly, I suppose, about what walking was as an art practice, as opposed to kind of just something we do, you know, to go to work.
Of all those books and things, which are the sort of top three that influence you
Ooh.
so far? Just can you narrow it down to three?
Yeah, maybe I can actually. I'd say, I mean, a really, there was a really important one that was maybe that first phase. There's obvious things like Michel de Certeau, The Practice of Everyday Life, and that was a book I'd grown up with through my undergraduate years. Never tutored through it. It was something I just kind of, you know, I kind of, I've, you know, have it in my bag for 20 years pretty much. So I'm still trying to fathom it. And but there was a book, and I'm trying to think of the author's name. It was an MIT guy, It's called The Image of the City.
Kevin Lynch.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Really key text, I think. And started me to think, to remind me about kind of spatial practices, I suppose, or spatial aspects of a city, maybe. And that started to come out in Venice. I can remember addressing that text in particular, building cityscapes out of things I found in a supermarket, I seem to remember. Thinking about this idea of being in a city and not being able to see an overview, and then the kind of cognitive process of being able to get an overview of a city. And that's increasingly, actually, that's informed what I've been doing recently, thinking more in terms of kind of, I suppose, like commonsensical spatial logical progressions, you know, being encapsulating spaces, I suppose, and then trying to confound that, trying to think of ways to encapsulate a city with in a matchbox or something, to put it crassly, but the ways that you can imagine spaces that can confound our kind of logico-mathematical space, I think, that Bevere calls it. It's a kind of, you know, it's the Cartesian space, if you like, you know, unique points and things not being able to be nested and being separate and distant and always other, you know. So recently, anyway, I'll get onto that, but that recent work's kind of addressed, tried to rethink
this. Can you remember the third book?
Yeah, well, there's, I'd say...
Probably quite tough.
There's a really recent one, actually, that's interesting. It's interesting, like, theoretically. It's not necessarily about walking, but funny enough, on the cover, actually, is an artist whose name I forget right now, who walked across borders, not Heath Bunting, but a guy proceeding in. It's by Miron Kwon, and it's called One Place After Another, and it's actually about locational identity. It's about how art practices, some historical point, they went from becoming spatial, concerned with space, into being concerned with place. So we're all familiar, a lot of us are familiar with that kind of dialogue between space and place. She then posits this other position, which is kind of beyond, breaks the kind of the self-satisfaction of having, dealing with a particular space and location and meaning and community and togetherness. It breaks through that, and it suddenly says, well, hold on, this idea of place and maybe the kind of the things that spoil it for us every day, the things that are kind of powerful and controlling, maybe we're actually the control people that are complicit with that. Maybe as professionals or as artists or whatever, we're somehow implicated in this destroying place and location, and we think we're kind of bolstering it, but actually maybe it's not as simple as that. So I started to get really interested in this position beyond this sort of self-satisfied.
And that started to inform your current work. Yeah. So tell us a bit more. What's the current stuff?
Well, I did a year ago a show in Cardiff, where I live now. I was invited to do my first UK solo exhibition. They gave me a gallery, so they gave me kind of three big physical white spaces to work into. And I didn't put any paintings on the walls. I didn't put any sculpture on the floor. I didn't build any of these devices. I actually worked with gallery assistants, people that would normally sit in the corner on a chair, making sure you didn't steal anything. I worked with them to invite people into the gallery. As a visitor would come into the gallery, I would invite them to walk with that gallery assistant through what, for all intents and purposes, was an empty gallery space, describing other gallery spaces. So they would nest, if you like. They could nest the Tate Modern in my small gallery. They could nest a tiny artist-run space within my gallery. So I was kind of collecting and kind of just through a kind of summoning up, you know, a mental summoning up of these other spaces. Mm. I could define my space with all these other spaces. But also I had three events. A significant one was the opening event, where I sent very precise invitations to other artists, to directors of galleries, to curators and writers, art critics. And I invited them, knowing that they defined the space of the gallery, actually. They defined the space of the art world. So that they would be describing physical spaces in my space, but they would also, looking around among each other, they would realise actually there was a professional space of the gallery. This was my attempt to really kind of break through this idea of not just a kind of sculptural idea of a physical sculptural idea, a formal sculptural idea of the physical spaces. It was beyond a kind of just the social relations of people or the institution defining the space. It was then hopefully asking people to kind of think about their role in defining that institutional space. And so I did get people, one person in particular, kind of admitting almost to transforming the space of the art world quite fundamentally from artist-run spaces in the 60s to the kind of Tate scale of organisation, which has replaced those kind of spaces to some extent. So, yeah, it was a way of kind of thinking spatially and institutionally and socially and. So that was a real point of reference for me.
Now, tell us just briefly what are you doing here? What's this? We're at the BAMP Centre, but you tell us what you're doing here.
Yeah, so I've just caught the tail end of the walk-in residency, but I'm here with the BAMP New Media Institute. So I'm now running the next residency, which will be dealing with located media, so artists and designers and architects who will come here and think about new technologies that can make sense of location, if you like. So, for example, there'll be mobile phones that will trigger audio tracks when they are placed in a particular geographical location. So people are developing maybe walking guides to the local area. They may be doing historical tours. Some of the artists will actually be probably confounding that kind of conventional use of that technology. But it's a field that was defined maybe about 4 or 5 years ago, I guess. And I wrote a critical text for a magazine called Mute in London, which was called The Shape of Located Media. And it was one of the first kind of very critical texts of this as a practice. And so then that's why I'm here, basically, is to kind of provide the flying ointment, I suppose, to the otherwise sort of happy hands, just an easy approach to using technology.
I asked Simon to suggest some favourite walks.
I'm actually now just working on some, I've been working on remembering walks a lot. So my favourite one that I walked and wrote was actually from the River Lee to Acton. It was a sunrise to sunset, and I wrote that in the middle of London walking. It's kind of the bit that you open the double pages in the middle and it sort of traverses that. And that was an interesting kind of durational walk. I tend not to do that kind of walk now. I've been going to the Brecon Beacons a lot, actually. But as training to go to the Tyrol, to the Austrian Tyrol, I'd really recommend actually going hut to hut on that bit of the Austrian Alps. I've been going to the in the Otzal Alps, and I'd hoped to walk into Italy, just over the pass there into Italy. So I'd recommend that. It looked straightforward, but actually it was a kind of alien terrain for me. It was like the altitude, the exposure, and everything was just a little bit too much for me, and I backed off of it when it was snowing. So.
To draw the interview to a close, I asked Simon if he could predict what might be happening for him in the next couple of years.
See, as an artist, things start to be a year or so in preparation. So I've got a publication coming out, which is documentation from a series of walks I've been doing recently called the Memorial Walks. They were commissioned by Film and Video Umbrella in London. I've been walking with 17 writers, taking a painting, the memory of a painting of trees, out into the Norfolk and Lincolnshire landscapes. So we worked initially with the collection in Norwich of the Norwich School of Painting. They were kind of renowned tree painters. And I stood a writer, walked with Ian St. Clair and George Surtees, and great writers, and stand in front of the painting and then take them out for a walk for a couple of hours and then take them to an area of the UK that has been deforested and drained and transformed quite considerably and also depopulated as well over time, and asking them to summon up, just through the power of speech actually, an image of that tree and kind of shout it or kind of speak this out into the prevailing winds. They'd be kind of facing west, and we walk eastward, they'd be facing east. And And it was, this was actually done as a memorial to Max Sebald, the writer, German writer who died 5 years previously, who in The Rings of Saturn has this kind of refrain of the tree kind of, and it's, you know, the inevitable tragedy of the it reaching its maximum lifespan and falling, you know. So it was there's a book that's being designed at the moment that will come out in March, I think, which will be launched in London. Then there are some other, there are a couple other commissions that are kind of that I've been contracted to do, which will come out in probably June of next year. So again, some walks actually in the Italian lakes and Alps, and some more work from memory, and something that hasn't been commissioned but it's been done because I want to do it, which is working with my grandmother, who's going blind. She's losing her sight. She gave me some beautiful square format slides of her walks in the Austrian Tyrol, and I found myself in the Alps actually writing letters to her about being snow blind and shut in a mountain hut for 3 days, stumbling down snow drifts and getting vertigo and things. So there's some work in there which will be me writing to her letters that we read to her. So there will be some work come from that, although I can't quite define what it's going to be. It may be a book, it may be a video piece or something.
Brilliant. Well, thanks very much, Simon
Pope. It's a pleasure.
You've been listening to Talking Walking, brought to you by Rethinking Cities. If you've any views on this interview or any walking issues, we would love to hear from you. Please follow the links on the talkingwalking.net website. We look forward to having you along for future episodes at talkingwalking.net.